Hello and welcome back to Even More News, the first and the only news podcast.
That's true.
It is. Fact.
What's your name?
Katie Stoll.
Hi, Katie Stoll.
What's yours?
It's Cody Johnston.
Cody Johnston on the ones and twos, everybody. I don't know what that means,
but I think
it's something to do with radio.
Okay.
We aren't radio. This is the future. Guys, really, really special holiday or day. It's our 3-year anniversary.
What?
Of the show.
That's so many.
Not of like friends.
Yeah.
It's so many years. If I had a gun to my head, I wouldn't have been able to say it was 3 years. I would have been like, I don't know, two? A
couple years,
maybe?
Yeah.
But apparently this is, according to our producer, the third anniversary of us starting to release content under this umbrella. And what a journey it's been.
Oh my, what a journey it has been.
That makes it sound negative. It's been a really cool journey.
Slather sarcasm on this, but yeah, it's cool.
I'm very, very, very grateful for everybody that has allowed us to do this, build this community. I am so grateful every day. Maybe not every day. It's been a hard year, but most days I'm very, very grateful. Not only that you guys, you know, support us and support the shows that we've been working on, but the friendships and the connections we've made online. Truly, it's really special to us. So thank you.
That is true. All those things are true, what you just said. I'm very grateful.
He agrees with me completely,
I do agree with you.
You might say.
Utterly and yesedly, I agree on the things that you said. Does that fit on a mug? That's not as punchy?
No, that was good. It's not as punchy, but it's good.
Okay,
I'm not going to say no.
Okay.
This is a positive environment. But I was going to say, it is weird that it's been 3 years and there still aren't any other news podcasts. Like,
that is weird.
I thought that this medium would have exploded by now, especially with the pandemic.
Mm-hmm. I thought we were trailblazers, but everyone was like, that's all we need. We just need the one.
And I'm flattered, truly.
Yeah.
I'm flattered
that ours
is the only opinion out there.
Yeah.
It means a lot, and I hope it never changes. Speaking of podcasts, podcast ads, which means thanks to Skillshare for supporting Even More News. Skillshare is an online learning community with so much to explore, real projects to create, and the support of fellow creatives. Skillshare empowers you to accomplish real growth. So if you're into that, explore your creativity at skillshare.com/morenews and get a free trial of premium membership.
Guess what? Raycon's offering you 15% off your entire order, and here's what you've got to do to get it. Go to buyraycon, that's buyraycon.com/evenmore.
Oh boy, Cody, it's not just the anniversary of our program here. Today also happens to be the 1-year anniversary of what most of us consider the beginning of the pandemic, the beginning of lockdown. In reality, it had been going on for a lot longer.
Yeah,
but today, on this day in 2020, former President Donald J. Trump told everybody that the pandemic was here. We remember.
This is the day that he said, like, hey, you folks, there's a pandemic you don't have to worry about. Throw away your masks or whatever he said.
Right. And then panic ensued. Yeah. I remember it very clearly because I think it was the night before or 2 nights before, Robert Evans, our co-host from Worst Year Ever, had been doing a live Behind the Bastard show. And we all went to support, and I sat next to you and Jamie Loftus. And afterwards, so many of your beautiful faces came up to talk to us, and we were all like, should we not be shaking hands? We did shake hands. We shook hands. Those were like the last hands we shook.
A lot of hand sanitizer and floating around there, too.
A lot of hand sanitizer.
The theater had homemade hand sanitizer for us.
Yeah, I wonder what was in there.
Yeah.
what
do you think
and
was
then,
in there?
I don't know, homemade?
All right, okay.
Alcohol? I don't know. You just can never be too sure what people are, what the ratios are here. Anyway, then we were sitting at the iHeart offices, or rather the How Stuff Works offices, where we record, or we used to record Worst Year Ever, and we watched that speech together. We were all like, I wonder if we're going to be able to go to the RNC this year. Spoiler, we weren't.
We're not.
I don't know. It's It just feels, it's weird. It's weird to be here. I'm thankful that we are here with some hope, that which we're going to talk about in a little bit. Stuff about vaccines and whatnot. It's been fucking hard, man.
Yeah.
How are you feeling?
Okay. I'm feeling. I mean, it definitely feels like we're, better than we were when it started.
Sure.
And, it was a long year. Also a very short year. Felt like it kind of flew.
Yeah.
But was also like a year, every day was like a year long, but the year itself was
short.
Yeah.
Isn't that funny?
I don't know. It's weird.
I am reflecting a lot on it. And I remember this time last year, before the gravity of the situation really hit home for most people, being like, this is going to wreck me. Mm-hmm. This is going to be so hard, knowing my past trauma, the things that I've been working on. And sure enough, very quickly, everything that you thought you had under control comes to the surface, and you're navigating relationships, romantic relationships, your family, your friendships. It's been rough. It has been as hard as I imagined. It's been harder. I am also blown away by my strength, by everyone's strength, by putting one foot in front of the other, by making the hard choice, by ignoring the national gaslighting to, just get back in there, get back to work, showing up for racial injustice, voting, getting out, all of the stuff that we have had to overcome this year. Guys, I hope that you are taking the time to process this and congratulate yourself as well. I know that I will never be the person that I was before this started. I am so much stronger than I gave myself credit for. And I know that it sounds trite, this too shall pass, one step in front of the other. But I see that here because, you're right. It each day feels like a year, and it's gone by so fast. I think about June, when I was having real panic attacks about, I can't do this for another year. But you just keep going.
Getting close to June again.
It's getting close to June again. It also makes me look at time differently and the time I want to spend with people. It showed me who are the most important people in my life and how I can show up for them, and that I can't fix their problems. I can't. And that's the thing that's big for me, is that I can't solve things for other people, but I can show up for them, however that looks. Anyway, I'm just rambling, but there's a lot. I think there's a lot for us all to individually unpack and
absolutely. Yeah.
Reflect upon here.
Especially as we get back out in there.
Because that's going to be sooner than we think.
And interacting with people again in more significant ways than we have.
Yeah, we're gonna talk about all of that a lot today and in the coming weeks, I'm sure. But it is speeding up. We will be vaccinated sooner than later. We will have a return to we will return to normal. For right now, it'll start off as somewhat normal.
Yeah.
But it's like, who do I want to be coming? I've thought about that a lot. Who do I want to be on the other side of this? I mean, myself, but how do I want to take these lessons with me as we move out of isolation and back into our life? What are the priorities? How do we show up for people? All of that. I guess we should talk about some news. Would you think? We're here for it. And
So we should continue being the only ones talking about it.
We're the only ones talking about it. I think you guys will all be very surprised to know that today, President Joe Biden has signed the COVID relief bill.
Okay.
Congratulations, everybody. We're going
to
talk about
it. Mr. Biden.
Look, it's not perfect, but there's a lot of good stuff in there. And it's undeniable. This is one of the biggest improvements to the social safety net that we've seen in decades, and that's a big deal. This is from the Daily Beast. Democrats sweeping $1.9 trillion COVID relief bill cleared its only remaining hurdle on Wednesday. The U.S. House of Representatives approved the final version of the legislation on a nearly party line vote of 220 to 221. Not one Republican supported it, while just one lone Democrat, Rep. Jared Golden, joined them in opposition. The House was the first chamber to approve the mammoth legislation, but after the Senate modified the bill, lawmakers had to vote on it again. In the process, the relief package was stripped of a minimum wage increase and more generous unemployment benefits. So we'll definitely talk about that, but I want to start by talking about the good things because there's something really cool in here. Obviously, the unemployment benefits were cut back, but there is still an extension of unemployment benefits of $300 a week. And yes, we will talk about the $1,400 STEMI check. But first, the child tax credit, because this is legitimately
kids don't
a very
pay taxes.
Big deal.
What?
No, they don't, but parents do. This is something really cool and worth celebrating. A lot of these quotes I'm about to read are from MarketWatch. The child tax credit in its current form pays up to $2,000 per child under age 17. Up to $1,400 of the credit can be lumped onto a tax refund, while another $600 can only be used to subtract from a household's tax bill. A taxpayer claiming the credit needs to have at least $2,500 in earned income to unlock the money that can be applied to a refund. So I'm going to pause and just say that this is actually interesting because this started in the 90s under Clinton, from what I understand, when the U.S. started to move into a more grotesque approach to welfare, the argument being that welfare incentivizes people to not work.
Laziness.
Something that we all recognize as being very untrue, especially under the lens of the pandemic.
Welfare queens.
Yeah, if people work, we have to incentivize people to work.
Also,
not
studies
addressing.
And studies about UBI that have shown that people don't. That does not happen to people.
Right. But anyway, in the 90s, we kind of pivoted to this. But what was so awful about it is that you couldn't qualify for the income tax credit unless you had income. You know, it's kind of like the same thing with unemployment. You can't file for unemployment unless you've lost your job, which only works to depress the lower and middle classes. You know, it doesn't address the reasons why people can't get a job. Anyway, under the freshly passed bill, the child tax credit now pays up to $3,600 for children under the age of 6. It also pays up to $3,000 for children above that age. It also will now pay for 17-year-olds. The $2,500 earned income threshold is erased, and the credit becomes completely refundable in the bill. So what effectively is happening, they're taking away that fact that you need to have earned a certain amount of money, and they are bumping up the amount of money you get per child, by the way. This isn't just, so if you have two children under the age of 6, you know, you're going to get, I can't do math, double that, you know, $3,600 for each kid. I have just shown everybody how bad I am at math. In real time. That's fine.
2,900, 72,000, 5,200.
Sure. Why not? One of those numbers. Back to this article. Undoing the earned income threshold is a particular benefit to Black and Latino children who disproportionately live in households falling underneath the earned income threshold, according to Catherine Michelmore, a professor at Syracuse University's Maxwell School of Citizenship and Public Affairs. Some 6.7 million kids are completely ineligible for the current credit because their household makes too little. That's 10% of all kids in the country. And what's really, really cool is that while this provision in the COVID relief bill will only be in effect for a year, but Democrats have already signaled that they intend to make this permanent, which I do have faith that they mean and hope that they will do, because once you start giving somebody something, it's much harder to sway public opinion into taking it away, right?
Yeah, I can't imagine they think that it would be good, even if they don't actually want to do it, that leading into 2022, they'll want to be like, all right, we're done. Never mind.
Right.
Although, who knows? They're not very good at
who
that
knows
kind of stuff. So
I'm not going to make promises on behalf of the Democrats. But this wouldn't have passed if we hadn't narrowly taken the Senate. And that's another thing that I think that we really should honor and celebrate. You know, incremental change,
bare minimum,
leading
of electoral
to
old politics.
But long term, this has big implications. The revamped credit will cost $100 billion annually, but there are estimates that it could bring in $800 billion in social benefits down the road. That's according to Columbia University's Center on Poverty and Social Policy.
So, like investing in the betterment of people's lives and conditions.
Go figure.
Down the line. Oh, improving things works out better down the line. It's just saying, okay.
Yeah, this is actually along those lines from NPR. There is fascinating research out there that shows children in poverty, their brains are actually not developing at the same pace or in the same ways as children in well-resourced households, so that children become disadvantaged for life. But with this kind of an investment, kids are not only better today, but they're going to be better long-term down the line.
Yeah, I
don't find that fascinating or shocking. I find that to be common sense.
I was going to say that's an odd descriptor, fascinating research, as if like...
I know.
That's like look at the brand new news. Oh my gosh, look at what happens if you disadvantage when you growing
absolutely
up.
Absolutely.
Children, who knew that they're like growing as we speak and they learn and they're developing.
Yeah.
Their bodies and brains are developing early on.
I mean, I heard this... fascinating. I mean, I was listening to The Daily. I believe this is where I heard this story of a woman who, you know, she was raising her children, teenage sons, and she was trying to juggle job, and she's a single mother and raising her kids. Her kids were not doing well in school. She had to quit a job so that she could focus on her kids, but then eventually got evicted and didn't have enough money. This is the kind of thing that would have made all the difference for her. She could have potentially hired somebody to come in and help. Also, really, really important to note that there are no rules on how this money can be spent. You can spend it on taking your kids out to lunch. You can spend it on summer camp. You can
booze
spend it on
and TVs, Katie.
If that's what they need. It's just, it's really exciting.
That is very cool. I've been told that this will incentivize people to have children out of wedlock and become single parents to mooch off the government. Because this amount of money actually will sustain somebody for the entire year. You're going to have a kid so you can get this tax credit and then just like sit back and relax. I will give you zero guesses as to who said something along those lines today.
Well, here's what I would say to that. We actually have declining, not fertility rates, but people just aren't having kids. And it is a problem that we will face ultimately down the line. We need to continue to.
We'll be fine. However many humans there are, is fine.
But the reason why people, a big reason why people don't is, the expense. It costs like $500,000 or something
really
to raise
a
kid.
Yeah.
And then there is the $1,400 stimulus. Now,
you pronounced
obviously.
2000 wrong.
I pronounced 2000.
I don't care anymore.
Look at this little quote from NBC News. That's a little loaded. The White House said he plans to enact the $1.9 trillion COVID-19 package on Friday. It ended up being today. It would provide the third round of stimulus checks after the $1,200 payments last March and the $600 payments in December, bill signed by President Donald Trump. He did promise $2,000 payments, but in the context of raising payments in the December bill, which Republicans limited to $600. Biden says the $1,400 checks would deliver on the promise when they are added to the previous payments. Every article I see talking about it just kind of downplays that. That's fine. $1,400 is better than the $1,200. I guess that's where I'm going to land.
Sure. It's just funny.
Promises, promises.
It's just funny how they... try to get away with that and did, and it's fine, whatever, who cares. People should care, but we'll move on to the next thing. 14's better than 1,200. 1,200 plus 600, though, that's more than 1,400. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Also, Biden doesn't seem
to... that math.
Yeah, he doesn't want to... to 1,800. He doesn't want to have to... he doesn't want to put his name on the checks, which I think is interesting, as like a repudiation of Donald Trump, who demanded his name be on checks. But actually, counterpoint, people like when... the name is on the check because they can attribute that money to that person. And if you
yeah,
want,
come on.
It's called PR. It's stupid, but like it does work. Obama didn't want his name on stimulus checks. You can,
thanks, Obama.
You can put, you can get it. If you get a check from the government, says like, here's the president that paid you, you're going to remember that.
Just on some, even on some level, that person that hates you is going to have to take it and deposit it or whatever it is, however this happens. And your name's on it.
Yeah.
So take that.
Yeah.
It's a campaign tactic.
Take it to the bank.
Do the tacky thing.
Yeah. Also, yeah. So, I mean, whatever. It's the two... they said $2,000 checks. They had pictures of checks with $2,000 on them. It's been months since the $600 payments. They meant $2,000. That's what they said. They didn't say you'll get $1,400 checks to make up for it. They're terrible at messaging. And they fumbled this. Even if you're, I see every day these people like, actually he said this and that's, and I knew that he meant 14, plus 600 is 2000. That's fine that you thought that. That is not what most people think when they hear $2,000 checks out the door. It was, if at worst, a failing of messaging on their part. So like,
but it was a purposeful
admit
failing.
That. But yeah. It worked. But
yes. It worked.
Anyway, $1,400 checks out the door to not everybody, by the way. They didn't, that's the other thing. They didn't say $2,000 checks out the door. They should have said $1,400 checks out the door to you if you make less than $75,000 a year.
Right. I mean, that was such a hang up on what, but yes, it is. That's the next thing I was going to say is that who qualifies? Individuals who make less than $75,000 or heads of households who make less than $112,500.
In 2019.
Yeah, for married couples, that would be $150,000 jointly. And the amount changes based on how much income you have.
Oh, yeah.
So, if you make $75,000 to $80,000, you'd still get checks, but it would be less than the $1,400.
Also, it's funny to me, I see people like, oh, like Republicans and stuff, like, oh, if you didn't lose your job or whatever, you don't need that money. It's like, that's a whole other conversation, but I always thought it was funny that, like, you're mad that the government is giving everybody money back.
Yeah.
Don't you hate, like, the idea of, like, taxes and, like, the government taking your money?
They just hate the idea
of
Democrats.
Get it back. Take
some
of it back. It's yours now.
Yeah. But you said something important about 2019, going off of that. So if you lost your job this year in 2020, file your taxes immediately.
Yeah.
So that you can qualify for this if your income status has changed during this year. So if you hear this, go do that if I'm speaking directly to you.
Yeah. It's good. There's some good stuff in there that will help people. There's some disappointing stuff, obviously. And there's always going to be things in there where it's like, well, that doesn't, you know, it's not really related, or like that corporate handout bullshit. But like, there's really good stuff. The child tax credit, like you said, is really, really good. There's some interesting things I saw about, like healthcare stuff. Their COBRA payments are covered 100% in this bill, it looks like. So if you, like lost your job and you have to get on COBRA, which by the way is bullshit and way too expensive.
It's so
COBRA
expensive.
Is awful.
I know.
It's awful. But 100% subsidized COBRA, for, I don't remember how long, but also this is like interesting to me in like a, like putting a Band-Aid on a flaw that like you don't want people to know really exists. COBRA's awful. Covering it now is really good, but like fix that. Make that not a thing.
Well, hopefully these are steps of people being, you know, similar to the child tax credit.
There's an interesting article in New York Times today about, again, this bill And how it affects Obamacare. It's good, and how Obamacare is going to get more affordable now. And there's an interesting passage here. The changes mean small adjustments for some Americans, very substantial ones for others. For anyone earning around $19,000, subsidies will now be generous enough to sign up for a typical plan with no monthly payment. For someone earning over $51,000, new subsidies could lower premiums by as much as $1,000 a month in the country's most expensive markets.
Wow.
That is so much fucking money. For a fucking insurance premium a month. That's what premiums are. You pay every fucking month, lower by as much as $1,000 a month. That is wild. And again,
and there's still money to be paid. Lowered as by as much as that, and they're still paying money.
So there's something left. But also, like, the fact that that is the case is the problem. And like, this is like, Joe Biden was the vice president when they passed Obamacare, and this fucking emergency, like, oh no, we have a pandemic, here's this thing for this problem, is fixing this bullshit from the thing he did years ago. It's just like, again,
well, that's not a direct line. I agree with
you. It's not a direct line.
And there, it's a lot more complicated than that, but you're right. You are, of course, right.
It's just interesting to observe.
It's just interesting. We need to do a couple, I want to talk about a couple more things before we take the break.
I can't wait.
You can't wait?
I can't
this
wait
is good stuff.
To agree with you completely.
I want to talk about, I don't mean to blow you off on your point. I do agree with you.
It's fine. You just did.
No, no, no. I'm just looking at the clock. All right, real quick. I want to talk about vaccinations because it's happening. Here we go. We're well on our way to having 100 million people vaccinated. As of Wednesday, when I was doing research, around 18% of Americans have received their shots. Predictions are that some areas may even have a vaccine surplus as early as April. Just today, well, he hasn't made the announcement, but apparently tonight Biden is going to give some sort of address that says everybody should be eligible for the vaccine by May, which is just wonderful news to hear because we're sitting here seeing it happen. Many of our parents have now been fully inoculated. We're all on the cusp here. Also, as we mentioned in the past, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine has been cleared. It'll be widely available, I believe, by summertime. I think the current plan is to use those doses for children.
Good. Yeah, pass on that Johnson & Johnson stuff.
No, I'm all about the Johnson & Johnson one. I would love it. But I think the rollout, it's just easier with kids to coordinate. And also will be, you know, used to coordinate along with whatever booster
shots. And they can't complain. They're not going to look it up.
They can't
Low
complain.
Information, vax getters are kids.
There also has been new CDC guidelines saying that if you have been vaccinated, you can hang out inside with other vaccinated people, masks off, no problem.
Can I kiss their tongues?
Also, you can.
Yes.
If you want, if that's your thing.
It's not. No, I can now.
But it will be when this is over because we got to try it. Mm-hmm. But that includes, so also if you are vaccinated, you can go visit with members of one household who have not been vaccinated but are in a low risk category without masks. They are officially saying that. So that means you can hug your parents if you do it right. If it's not like in the middle of a crowded party or something.
Sure, sure,
you know,
sure.
Be
sure,
safe.
Sure, sure.
We have to keep being safe here. Guys, I can't tell you.
I did this. Lit up. You were so excited. You did what?
I did this. I saw my parents. They were vaccinated. Mm-hmm. They're fully vaccinated. We maintained social distance and stuff at first, and then I saw these guidelines, and they came inside, and I got to show my mom my house for the first time. And, oh boy, just really game changer for me, and I can't wait for you to have that experience. I can't wait for all of you guys to have this experience, because it's very special.
Yeah, that's very special. My mother finally gets to meet her grandchild.
I'm so happy for you guys.
It's so exciting for her, and everybody.
And everybody, but of course, I know how much that means for your mom. Yeah. And I just wanted to really quick have a conversation about waitlisting to get the shots early, because at first I was a little hesitant about that. And I want to be clear, this doesn't mean doing what happened in LA and Pasadena, where a bunch of people signed up when they shouldn't have and then shut down the distribution, the vaccination site for the day. They had to turn everybody away because for some reason there was a people thought that they could register even though they weren't eligible yet. So that ended up costing a whole bunch of people who actually needed the dose their opportunity. But what it does mean is signing up for things like this new app or website, Dr. B, check it out. You put your name in the system and you tell them your information, and they will text you when extra dose is available in your area, and you have like a set amount of time to respond and get there, and you can get vaccinated, which is just brilliant. I don't know why the government hasn't set something up like this. And I don't know how well it works. I signed myself up and was the 1 millionth person or something like that, which was daunting. But again, it's not really like I'm 1 millionth in line. You know, you also can, in California, they're doing a program where you can volunteer to help at a vaccination site for 4 hours and you can get inoculated. You don't have to be a medical professional. You can help with logistics and greeting people. I'm not sure what that's like in other states, but I'm sure they have options like that. Or if they don't, they will soon. Or you can try to go to a pharmacy, you know, put yourself on the wait list and you hang around till the end of the day and take your chances. Whatever means possible. I felt worried about saying that advice because I don't want to take it from a vulnerable person. But the reality is that we will soon have plenty of availability, and we need to get everybody inoculated as soon as possible. So it's actually a good thing that you can do for your community. I'm definitely going to be trying to do that. And I think everybody
do what you can.
Should if you can.
Don't
all right.
Be shamed into not getting.
I'm going to shame you into getting the vaccination.
Okay.
But again, not in some shady way. All right. We are going to take a really quick break. And then when we come back, we actually have a very special guest. Ooh.
Is it me?
It's Cody. And someone else.
Hey. Hi. It's ad time for advertisements. Isn't that fun for you and us? No matter what 2021 brings, you can spend it creating something meaningful with Skillshare's online classes. Got time? Make something. Don't have time? Okay. Anyway, Skillshare is an online learning community that offers membership with meaning, whatever that phrase means to you. There's so much to explore and to learn and to create. So many opportunities to bring more beauty and fun to the world. Like the unparalleled beauty of angelic interdimensional hellspawn Snoofle Doofle, brought to you thanks to Skillshare's great class, simple character animation, create a walk cycle with Duik from Fraser Davidson. Now I know things about the program I like to use. At less than $10 a month, Skillshare is incredibly affordable, especially when compared to pricey in-person classes and workshops that are also, you know, a little less safe at the moment, though getting more safe as we speak, as we've discussed earlier in the non-ad portion of the episode. So hey, hi, how's it going? Why not explore your creativity at Skillshare.com/morenews and get a free trial of premium membership.
Hey there, thanks for listening. Rest your eyes. Listen to the dulcet tones of my smooth voice. Yes, we all need time to relax and take a break from screens. But guess what? You can still consume content with Raycon wireless earbuds. Yes, we've teamed up with Raycon and recommend their wireless earbuds. You'll get 15% off your entire Raycon order at buyraycon.com/evenmore. Whether you're catching up on your favorite one and only news podcast, or a D&D podcast, or a true crime podcast, or a something else podcast. Maybe you're binging an audiobook, binging the band Audio Slave, or powering through your workout. A pair of Raycons in your ears can make all the difference. They're water and sweat resistant, and the Bluetooth pairs quickly and seamlessly. And somehow, their great sound starts at half the price of other premium audio brands. I like my Raycon earbuds because they charge really fast. And most importantly, they don't have those weird dangling stems coming from them. You know, the stemmy danglers. Charge them up. Use them for 6 hours, then charge them up again. I have mine in when I'm doing chores or other undisclosed activities. Raycon's offering 15% off all their products for our listeners. And here's what you got to do. Go to buyraycon.com/evenmore. That's it. You'll get 15% off your entire Raycon order. So feel free to grab a pair and a spare. That's 15% off at buyraycon.com/evenmore. buyraycon.com/evenmore. And we are back, as promised, for even more news. And as I teased right before the break, we are joined by a very, very special guest, writer, host of the podcast Noble Blood, Dana Schwartz.
Thank you so much for having me. Very, very excited to be here.
Thrilled to have you. I mean, we want to have you on to talk about all sorts of stuff, but today we are having you on to talk about Meghan Markle and the royal family. And I know that some of our listeners who live across the pond, you know, might be like, okay, a bunch of Americans, but this is a qualified American. You were on the BBC this week, right?
I was offering an American perspective on the BBC, and I am a professional talking about historical royal family things. So I feel like in terms of context, I can be very helpful. And also just as a woman in the world.
Yeah.
You know, we were in Los Angeles. Meghan Markle lived in Los Angeles.
She's one of ours.
I'm from the North Shore of Chicago. She went to college on the North Shore of Chicago.
You guys have so much in common.
Yeah. We're basically the same.
I mean, just tooting my own horn, I also made it onto the BBC this week.
Oh, no. What were you talking about the BBC about?
I wasn't. The BBC.com took one of my tweets about Piers Morgan. So we're all qualified in our own way to talk about this story. I guess we'll start with the interview, Meghan. You're not Meghan, but here we are. You're so much alike. I just got confused. What were your thoughts? I think most people know the gist of the interview, but some of your takeaways, I guess, the starting point.
I think for like historical context, we can sort of, I mean, it was interesting to me because any royal speaking out in sort of that intimate, what appeared at least to be an unfiltered, unvarnished thing is novel. That is just new for the royal family, who I think maintain their power by creating an air of like opacity. Thank you.
I don't know. We'll get some comments, I bet.
But out of necessity. I mean, there are holdings of millions of dollars of like arguably stolen jewels and land holdings. And if you realize like, oh, these are just people who aren't necessarily smarter than your average person or more interesting, the whole facade of the crown crumbles with it. So I think anything that shows them as like individuals that are relatable undermines the idea of the crown. So the idea that two royals, whether they're sitting or active royals, sitting down for an interview at all is incredibly rare. Very famously, when Diana was divorcing Prince Charles, she sat down for an interview with the journalist Andrew Morton, who then like wrote a book and was like, I interviewed Princess Diana, and she denied it. She's like, nope, we never sat down. Like the palace issued a formal statement saying that the interview never happened, even though objectively it did. So just like off the bat.
Wait,
and then,
is that the famous one that we know about, the Diana interview?
There are later she'll do
later
on
she
the
did
air.
The one. Yes. Okay.
But this was like a off the record interview. I guess on the record because he recorded it, but sort of mid divorce from Charles that the crown denied that ever happened. But now we know it did happen. So I think a lot of British people just like balked at that. And I think personally, like maybe because you and I are, and we're all like more accustomed to seeing like celebrities give interviews like that, like it seemed like there were a lot of like insights, but it wasn't particularly it wasn't different, you know, than another actor or actress speaking out about mental health issues and, you know, racism. And I thought it was very powerful. But I think for British people, seeing that as like a direct assault on their very idea of the crown, it represented more than it was, if that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as I was watching it, I think I agree with what you're saying. I felt shocked, not at the content, but you're like, wow, this is a big deal that someone is speaking out on the record.
Yeah.
And honestly, very fairly, like from my perspective, I see a lot of the online, the people talking about it and the pushback of, you know, tackiness or classless or, you know, people take up the mantle of Meghan Markle versus, you know, Kate Middleton, when actually Meghan was very gracious to Kate. She was very, you know, honest, but also clear. And I don't think that there was anything tacky but about what happened, and that from our American perspective, but, you know, it goes against the norm and the traditions there. And it's so, I don't know. It's just, I am equally reviled of the monarchy, the British monarchy, and also fascinated by how they continue to exist. Do you think that there is a world where they don't? Like,
I think honestly, people in England sometimes, like younger, more liberal people, complain about like the tax dollars that the royal family costs. But I do think, like, when you actually work it out, they make more for England in terms, yes, of like tourism, and they're like glorified mascots, really. And they do make a lot of money in terms of tourism and palace and like fundraising for the country. So I don't think they'll ever cease to exist, especially because now they have like no power. But
yeah,
I mean, it's so insane, like, that we're arguing, like, shouldn't it be voluntary? They're like, ah, this life of service. It's like, yeah, well, if Meghan and Harry didn't want to be part of it, are they not allowed out? Is it a cult? Like, why are we so mad that two consenting adults who are nowhere near the line of succession,
yeah,
like, just didn't want to do this for a job, when it's like, if it's quote unquote like service, it's like, yeah, it should be voluntary.
Yeah, yeah.
But they see it as like a dereliction of duty. And duty that at this point, I think Harry is like eighth in line for the throne.
Yeah.
Which is, he's never going to become king. And it's like his entire life then is what I imagine is like graduation ceremonies. Just like,
yeah,
three graduation ceremonies in different towns a day, where you just have to be polite and smile and shake hands all day, every day for the rest of your life.
Opening car lots and stuff.
Yeah. Local folk. He has to watch like a lot of local folk dance.
It sounds, I mean, like, cool for a bit, but not for a lifetime. There are other things to be done. There's Netflix deals to be made.
Also, yeah, like, there's an aspect I see of like, they're complaining about this and this and this.
Yeah.
Like, they're not complaining about like having money and stuff. They're just like, I don't want to do this anymore. It's stupid.
Yeah.
Having money seems great. Being a rich person without responsibilities seems way better than being a rich person who has to like wear tights and like wave graciously.
Yeah, it certainly does. Interesting part of this whole conversation is being angry. There's an element of people being angry with them just for being rich, which is okay. That's a conversation to be had, and about the monarchy and about William's, or Harry, sorry, you know, the personal wealth that they have and all of that. But that's separate to me than the abuses that she was suffering. And those are two very different conversations that do not and should not be conflated. Like, you should be fine because you have all these resources. Well, you don't have access to those resources. You're being locked up, you know, you're in a prison, and or the whole, you should have known what you were getting into.
Yeah. Like, well, sorry, it's voluntary. I want to get out of it. That is so striking to me when people are like, oh, she's a rich person, she shouldn't be allowed to complain. It's like, well, yeah, but even as we've found out with like all these abuses in Hollywood, it's like, even ostensibly powerful actresses, particularly women, are sometimes put in very violating and vulnerable positions. And Meghan Markle being an American, being a divorcee just on the front, meant that a lot of the British aristocracy was going to reject her. And then being, you know, biracial, being Black, like, she was subject to a lot of racist abuse. And I think someone being
undeniable.
Like, undeniable. And someone being, you can like look at the pages of like tabloids and be like, oh, there it is physically. And the fact that people are like, because she's rich, she can't bring that to people's attention. It's like, unfortunately, people are going to listen to Meghan Markle more than an average anonymous woman on the street who's suffering racism. Just like she's going to get more press attention. So why can't she also speak up and raise an issue?
Yeah. And for me, what's another thing that's striking about this conversation, which I still can't believe how fascinated I am by it, but I am, I mean, seeing how this all plays out and just the monarchy in general. But what's interesting about it, coming on the tails of the Britney Spears documentary, for example, these conversations that we're having about how we discuss women in, you know, public figures, female public figures, how the unfair standards we set for them and how the press can destroy your life. And I think that there is, if you made a Venn diagram of people, what they care about things, I think that there's absolutely an overlap of people that are, you know, hashtag free Britney, but also Megan needs to cool her jets talking there, about her mental health.
There's a lot of racial overtones, I think, yes, coded into the language of how people talk about Megan, talking about her being like a social climber and a gold digger in ways that they didn't with Kate. And I think also the crown, a thing that Megan danced around saying in her interview with Oprah that she didn't say explicitly, but I think she raised quite eloquently, is that the crown understands that it's a fragile institution, that they need the tabloids and the media on their side fundamentally. And I think they were kind of happy to have Meghan serve as a lightning rod to attract a lot of the negative attention and make Kate look better in contrast. You know, tabloids love a bad girl and a good girl. I mean, it goes back to like Hillary Duff and Lindsay Lohan. It's just like a classic tabloid thing. And I think they were like, well, if it's between Kate Middleton, who's in line to be queen, and this random American actress, Meghan Markle, why are we going to stand up for Meghan Markle if it's making Kate look better?
Which is so gross. I just can't. Gross. With so many. Yeah, you're right. And they don't deny it. They don't do anything. That's one of the things from this interview. Like, there's no trying to protect Meghan. There's no trying to distance herself. Now, she made clear that there's a difference between, you know, the royal family and the firm or the establishment, I think, is how Diana referred to them in her interview, her big one. But at the same time, nobody in that family was like, no, we need to issue some sort of a statement. Nobody in that family stepped in to help in any capacity. And you're right. It is to serve as like a bring the, because no press is bad press, but let's redirect it onto Kate. And we don't need to choose between two beautiful women as to which one we like the most. That's another thing that's so frustrating when I go online and see anything, you know, pick side by side comparisons saying who's better. They're both lovely.
Isn't it so wild that people get so furious at like Kate at, pardon me, people get so furious at Harry and Meghan for like their $10 million Netflix deal? Like, oh, I can't believe they're just cashing out when, like, oh, so you're on the side of the British royal family? Like, yeah. One, do you know how much money they have? And two, do you know how they made that money? Because given the choice, I would think I'd rather be on the side of someone who made, like, millions of dollars on Netflix. But, like, the British royal family did not make their hundreds of millions of dollars in ways that are quite as
easy to track, above board. We'll say,
there's a lot of colonization going on, mostly tobacco and colonies.
Like, I just have, like, this is the hill you want to die on, huh?
Yeah.
It's very, very funny seeing so many Americans just like reflexively defending just like,
because they're
the
so, I feel like the right in America right now, the way I see it on the internet, they're so primed to be angry at anyone raising the issue of racism at all. If someone says, hi, I've experienced this issue of racism, instinctually, they have to say, no, you didn't, you're wrong, and we're automatically on the other side.
Yeah.
Even if it's the British royal family.
Yeah.
An actual monarchy.
And so, I guess, was it today or yesterday, William spoke and said, they are not racist. So that's something.
Good for him.
Oh,
brave,
okay.
If true. Another topic I wanted to touch on was this Piers Morgan walking off his show. Just so upset at being called out at his abusive behavior and how he has treated not only Meghan Markle, but so many people in the most vilest of ways. He stormed off set. And then the next today it came out that he has been fired. Apparently Megan wrote a letter or contacted the producers, as did hundreds of thousands of people writing in mail. And I think that I was delighted. But the truth is that Piers Morgan isn't gone. There's other places for him to go. But I do like that there was an on-camera meltdown and a confrontation over his behavior and an actual conversation that this brings up.
He's just such a wild attention addict. Someone put together a compilation of all the times he's talked about Meghan on air. Specifically, he talks about how he met her for a drink in London once, the day before she met Harry. And then afterwards, she never spoke to him again. Yeah, like, because maybe she found you to be weird in public. And he brings it up.
Repulsive.
So much. He literally is like, and she ghosted me. She ghosted me. I put her in a cab and I never heard from her again. And he brings it up so much where you're like, get her name out of your mouth.
Did he?
She doesn't talk about you. Yeah.
Did he?
Get a hint, buddy.
She was going to choose him over Prince Harry?
Who wants to talk to
Prince Harry?
But like, who wants to talk to Piers Morgan a second time?
Why did she hang out with Piers Morgan at all? But who even knows what circumstances or reasons? But
you meet once and then you're like, this man is awful. And then you never talk to him again.
He's just also like a really full of shit baby. Even the way he frames his like walkout was that he doesn't like being, he's like sitting there while his colleagues call him diabolical. Which was said about him after he stormed off. He left, and then the word diabolical was used. And he's like, I don't like sitting there. It's like, well, you weren't sitting there.
There's
you left.
That consistency.
That's the whole point.
It's manipulative. It's manipulative for the sake of him being a reactionary and getting attention. You know, like there's no core logic to who he is or what he believes.
No, he's going to get he's going to do his own special. And he'll call it Triggered, and that'll be that. Triggered or canceled. We haven't settled on what the title will be, but it'll be one of those, because that's the plan.
Did you see
that's the
that
plan
a British
these days
guy on Fox
media.
News was like, the Queen's not racist. She's the head of a commonwealth with colonial lands all over the world. And
what
those lands have black and Asian people.
Unpack that phrase, colonial land. What are you? Come
I'm going to guess that nobody on Fox News
that a little
back
bit
on that or anything at all.
Almost certainly not.
Shocking.
Pretty
shocking.
Good guess.
Who do you think said the racist comment? If you guys missed this, it was someone unnamed in the family.
It was definitely Charles.
Charles, you think it's Charles. Inquired as, said, how dark will the baby's skin tone be? You think it's Charles. Is there any chance that he gets skipped over and goes straight to William? No.
Because Oprah, the morning after on CBS, talking to Gail, was like, Prince Harry wanted me to specify and clarify that the person who made that comment wasn't the Queen or Prince Philip.
Yeah.
So you're like,
saw that.
Kate?
Also, what the next day after this, Prince Charles did like a photo op with a bunch of healthcare workers.
Yeah, it's a him.
Yeah.
It's him. That's so gross. It was so transparent.
The next day, at least wait a day, guy.
Man, like, who plays him on The Crown? Because I
so
almost
obvious.
Like him because of the guy that plays him on The Crown.
I
but
know,
not
he's such
really.
A little
he's
cutie.
Just, no, I mean, you know, he's a very good actor. And, you know, you almost have empathy. But even this charismatic portrayal, you're like, this man is repulsive.
He reminds me the character in The Crown again, because fortunately, I don't know Prince Charles personally.
Oh,
but he's very much, I know, he's very much, he feels like that type of guy who like fancies himself an intellectual and has never been challenged once in his life because, you know, he's the future king of England. And so he just fundamentally believes secretly he's the smartest person in the world.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's the person you want being the figurehead of your country.
I mean, that was the whole thing famously with Diana. He didn't think she was a serious person. He like was mad that she wouldn't like listen to his speeches on Welsh agriculture, like whatever speeches he was preparing at the time. He thought she was just a frivolous person.
And
yeah,
again,
and it's like maybe she's just a 19-year-old girl who married. Yeah.
With your much older husband Yeah, I mean, that too. When you talk about The Crown and their relationship with the media, that's a good example of the media loving someone that's not the future king and pitting them, you know, pro Diana against Charles and what that did to them and wanting to not have that kind of a PR situation again, you know?
I think the royal family also fundamentally hates what we in Los Angeles would call like a breakout star because it takes away from the institution as a whole and its cohesion.
But I mean, in order for them to be relevant, they have to evolve. Do you think that this is an opportunity that might be seized upon here to start to evolve? No.
I feel like they really whiffed this opportunity. I think it could have been, I mean, like that Meghan was their gift, like this beautiful, unfortunately, colorism exists. But she is black, but she's incredibly light skinned and passing. Like she's the most palatable version of diversity physically possible.
And they still couldn't
and
get it right.
And they still completely whiffed it with like the most racist and sexist attacks on her as a person. I was going to say good for them for now they just get to live in California and be rich and famous people, which is like a pretty good way to live.
Get out of there. Be rich and don't do anything somewhere else.
Be rich in a place where maybe people are nice and smile and like will give you a hug once in your life.
I should have brought this up earlier. But it's another thing that just makes me mad is this whole conversation about, okay, deciding before Archie was even born that he was not going to have the title of prince, which even though he's the great grandson of the queen, the grandson of the future king. And what that means is a stripping of their protection, which is what happened to Diana when she was divorced and okay, the title, whatever, her royal highness or, but if it means that you don't have protection, Archie, Harry were both born into this family, which puts them in the spotlight of the entire world. They need to have protection. Diana needed to have protection. And the fact that that happened to Harry's mother and you don't learn that lesson, it's actually kind of chilling. What do you think that this woman and this baby who are the target of so much hatred, what do you think that it means to them, you know?
I found it so chilling. And that was a thing that I think Meghan smartly on Oprah stressed the security more than the title. But I also just imagined being in her shoes and being married to Harry and you're pregnant with this baby and every other great-grandchild of the queen is just a prince or princess. Mm-hmm. And then you find out for your baby, they're changing the rules. You'd be like,
why?
What? Like that would just be so fundamentally hurtful to you. You would feel unloved and unvalued in this family. Like that is security, which is a legitimate concern or not. Like that is just like, that would be really hurtful as a person in a family.
Yeah, I agree. Anyway, it makes my family look much better in comparison.
Yeah.
Dita, we're so grateful for you taking the time to chat with us.
And to chat, to yell, and anytime I can just rant about the British royal family.
I mean, please, you're welcome here anytime. Also, if you want to rant about anything else at all, we'd be thrilled to have you.
Peel and stick wallpaper, big fan.
I mean, we're gonna take a picture for socials so you guys can all check out her incredible wallpaper, which I am now thinking I want to do something like that.
Not too hard. If I can do it, you can do it.
I don't know about that, Dana. The rest of the listeners heard how bad I was at math at the top of this episode. Tell us a little bit before we let you go about your podcast, Royal Blood, and where people can check it out and everything else you have to promote.
Subscribe to Noble Blood on wherever you get your podcast, like iHeartRadio or Apple or Spotify. It's a podcast where I tell stories like narratively, but scripted stories about monarchs throughout history. And usually the ends are pretty bloody and tragic.
Yeah.
But I've also written a couple books and another one is upcoming soon. So go to your local indie bookstore and follow me on Twitter, Instagram, at Dana Schwartz with 3 Z's.
You really should. Dana's a great follow.
Oh, thank you.
She is very prolific.
Usually procrastinating, yeah.
That's how you work. You procrastinate and then it all comes out all at once.
Yeah.
I love that. We all have our systems. But yeah, you also write a lot of articles and stuff that I think a lot of our listeners would be very interested in.
Thank you so much. You're very, very sweet. I'm a big fan of both of you and both of your internet outputs.
Thank you, Dana. Can't wait to hug you and hang out in normal life.
I know
soon,
we live
hopefully.
So close.
We live so close.
We figured out we're like 5 minutes away.
We're gonna be doing a lot more socializing eventually.
2025.
All right, that does it for us today, guys. We will be back next week. And in the meantime, I just want to make sure you know that we love you very much.
Love Nailed much. It.